So let me just go over there, you know, just like, how many, what happens to me, those fails, like, five, one of the five, like. So then, you know, I would just.
Okay, so.
So go through the transfer, work it.
While we're getting connected, we're gonna just get started. So we had planned on putting out a little questionnaire to get a sense of, you know, what are the most pressing legal issues that you guys see in your respect. So we're gonna just do this out loud and raise your hands, and then we can talk about it and get a sense of, you know, how many people, what the proportion is. So, first one, do you think your DAO is illegal, i.e. operating outside existing legal framework?
Is there a question about this question?
Yes.
What is a legal framework?
Operates outside the law.
Do you mean the rules of nation states?
You're doing a wonderful job of pointing to exactly that problem. So
do we mean?
So we mean, you know, kind of the misconception, the perception that, oh, because you deployed something on code, you've made private contracts between individuals, and there's no specific law that has, you know, that you think has reach or should have reach that you can somehow operate in this case.
So by law specifically, it's not like a legal system associated with the nation state.
Yes.
Okay. So
you don't know jurisdiction.
That's what I'm asking. That's what we legal framework is.
No, actually, not just
speaking about the first question was about, like, people think that if they're not registered anywhere, that they do not have to comply with any regulation.
Which is
so
a very
regulations meaning legislation associated with the nation state apparatus.
Yeah.
By regulation, you mean legislation associated with the nation state apparatus?
Yes. Yes, state law.
State law. Okay, great. So this is a question about state legal framework as in state law.
Yes.
Okay, great. I just want to be, if so, it's a very different answer than if you just mean
law
more generally.
Yeah.
Laws of God.
For example, yes. The natural
like
law
this
is
the God. That's coming. I don't think.
Yeah. Common law is in some way not exactly the law associated with a nation state regulation.
Right. I don't know if I agree about the last thing you said with common law, but yeah, I get where you're coming from.
You know,
common law depends on which jurisdiction you're operating in.
Anyway, we shouldn't hide that.
Which is going to trash them a little bit.
They don't like to look at that. How many of you guys think that you guys can just deploy code and figure things out, and then you can grow, and then, you know, at some point, you know, you're going to figure out the law later?
Forums work.
Again, I mean, yes, just because you mean the specifically very narrow definition of law.
Okay.
Can you refer to rest of the questions?
Assume that when you refer to law, it's state law. If it's not state law, your answer would have been different.
Like nation-state law.
Does a token that we think is a security token count as a legal wrapper?
Yes.
We just have to share it.
But you have a corporation that is
incorporated. I'm asking, are you part of the presenters?
Yes, actually.
It's fine.
We planted him in the audience.
Yeah, does a DAO with a security token where the company documents reference a contract count as a legal. But the
DAO, is it basically within the company? That because you just mentioned the company, so there is some kind of a legal wrapper, or is the DAO outside of that company?
Are you guys incorporated in a jurisdiction? Do you have a board structure?
Does the company own the DAO? Does Does the company own the DAO?
Yeah.
The company owns the DAO.
Okay, so yeah, actually, we have 3 people out of 16 who have a wrapper.
I just came in. Did you guys define, could you redefine what a remote or what legal wrapper means in context of this discussion?
We didn't actually.
That's a question.
Yeah.
We didn't. Legal wrapper, in what we mean with legal wrapper, is pretty wide. It is a company, a corporation, an LLC, a mutual, a cooperative, anything that allows you to have legal personality within the legacy legal system. So, do you have a legal wrapper? You're down. Does it have a legal wrapper?
I don't have a DAO.
Okay.
Thanks for the question.
My DAO has a legal wrapper.
Door?
Yeah.
And so what is the legal wrapper saying?
It says that the company itself is a smart contract fit. It's the one BDLC.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with that. Yes.
Okay. Can your DAO buy real assets and hold title to real assets?
So when you say DAO, are you referring, because people use the term ambiguously.
Yes.
Many people use it to refer to the deployed smart contract, which I disagree with because it's a smart contract. It's not really what the DAO is. It's some sort of, you know, it could be a tacit agreement, an unwritten agreement, but it's some sort of pairing of an agreement with a smart contract. So
it's an organization.
Yeah, it's an organization, right. So the code is augmenting the organization, but it's not the same thing. Is that how you're using the term, or?
So actually, we've had these very long discussions on what is the definition of a DAO, is it more than a smart contract, a series of smart contracts. In this case, I think we are talking more about this kind of larger, you know, there's also this problem of the DAO only exists as a series of smart contracts, but the idea of the DAO, the project, the participants, obviously encompass more layers of participation.
Right. But the organization is that broader.
Exactly. So we're talking more about the broader thing.
Okay.
Right.
So then, yeah, it can buy. Right. Well, it sort of depends
whether a person must do that.
Right. A person. Yeah.
With
person.
This particular set of smart contracts.
Right. Exactly. But well, a person can, or a legal person can. Right.
Yes.
If you just, depending on the nature of the social arrangement, there may be a legal person, it may be a partnership, it could be an actual formal entity. But it should, if it exists as a legal person, it can buy, or sort of the group can buy, and it can become like, you know, tenancy in common and held property.
Right. So in this case, where we have 2 out of, let's say, 16 in this room who have some sort of legal wrapper, that legal personality would be the one that would buy the real assets. But in all of the other cases, it would be
not so sure.
Because you weren't part of the ones that said that you need a wrapper on my
No, no. So, but maybe, but even sometimes just a group of people getting together, if they don't specifically disclaim otherwise, are deemed to be a legal entity.
Unassociated.
Yeah, so even if there's not a written one, or a partnership, yeah, there still could be a legal person that could
buy. But the partnership itself wouldn't usually be a legal person.
Yes.
No.
So you wouldn't.
So the DAO, it's on the DAO. It's
your
one of the partners in this.
I
de facto general partnership.
Yeah, I think that is the DAO. You know, if people have formed, if the consequence of this group of people getting together and using the smart contract on the legal layer is that it's a partnership, then yes, that partnership could go out and buy property. And in fact, it may be doing so all the time.
In somebody's name.
People don't realize that that's what's going on in the legal layer.
But partnership is just about the worst legal structure you can use because you have unlimited liability.
Exactly.
And inchoate and uncrystallized, and you don't recommend it because...
Right, but it doesn't depend. I think the key point is just because you have a legal wrapper, you don't have a legal wrapper, doesn't mean you don't have a legal entity. You might.
You might actually want liability. I mean, you'd be much more credible if your ass is on the line.
I agree. You might want to use your responsibility.
Most of the time, they don't have legal personalities themselves. The majority of the institution, you buy on behalf, you actually, the contracting is done on the level above the persons who are the partners, not the partnership itself.
But again, if someone is in a partnership, they can go out, they can buy property on behalf of the partnership.
Yes,
the partnership is buying the property. So you're right, at a more mechanical level, the way that's rationalized, is slightly different, because what they're actually doing is they're going out and they're binding individually each partner, and that creates a collective effect. But it still is best conceptualized as like the legal personhood of the partnership, you know, acquiring some partner.
But then that creates a trust that goes to litigation. I've actually done complex partnership litigations before, and this is the last thing you actually want to do.
So isn't the default legal entity also a legal wrapper in itself?
It depends. It depends on which jurisdiction you are. It depends on
that's kind of what I'm saying.
In the majority of jurisdictions, the default general partnership will not have on its own legal personality. It's actually the partners who have the legal personality, because usually there would be persons or other companies, and they are the legal persons. So in that respect, you wouldn't.
So, okay, so
this is something, and this is something usually is only discovered at, you know, in ex post enforcement, you know, and that sort of thing. So in the eyes of, in the visibility of the legacy legal world, the person who's holding title might be an individual, which is in this formed partnership. And it's only later, you know, when you're looking at what rights and duties arise from this particular group of individuals and their actions, do you then, does a court or, you know, is it deemed actually a partnership?
That's usually in common law jurisdictions, which is English, American law jurisdictions. Well, civil law jurisdictions, France, Germany, China, Japan, situation's probably different. Any civil law is
very similar.
Is it very similar? Okay.
Actually, you know, the difference between civil and common law, in my opinion, is very much overstated. So I'm qualified actually in the US and in Germany.
Okay.
So there is very similar. So.
But the adversarial and inquisitorial systems, as well as the certainty from finding previous judgments, it's
different.
But it's
very
different.
But in practice, the difference is very small. That's my, but it's a different.
In practice for businesses.
But it doesn't escape sometimes you have the free action.
But you know, let's just not talk about this right now. So let's focus on the topic at hand. You know, we wanted to just ask these questions to kind of get ourselves to prepare what the legal issues are we have to look at in this workshop. So I think we should just go to the next question. Can you DAO hold crypto assets?
Yes.
And hold title to those?
Yes.
Who agrees with this?
That's just a variation of the previous question, right? Of course, it can hold crypto assets, but whether it can hold title is just the same as question three. The answer is the same.
I think the issue with title comes down to private key ownership and who has access to that private key.
No, you know, possession's 9/10 of the law, but...
But what if
you get control is actually an operation, right? But ownership is a legal status,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Between controlling something internationally.
So property is...
If the jurisdiction that the legal wrapper is in doesn't recognize crypto assets as assets, but they can still technically hold them, is that a...
Yeah, that's, I mean,
the question is, does the legal, the crypto asset question involve legal title or not?
Yes.
Is it a legal title question?
Yeah.
Or is it
just
an asset
to think about.
It's get us to think about like the difficulties with this question. I mean, the reason why it's raised like that is because, yeah, the difference in title and what is possible in the legal world is the difference between control and actually having title to those assets. And to answer the gentleman's question, if your jurisdiction does not recognize crypto assets, then you're not holding any assets, right?
That's true.
So, no.
Okay. Legally, no.
Yeah,
but crypto,
know, but
yes.
In practice,
crypto, yes.
In practice, you do not. Does your DAO fall under any? I mean, is your DAO falling in or attached to any geographical jurisdiction other than the ones, I mean, we had the legal wrapper, there are two people who have a DAO with a legal wrapper. Does anyone else think that their DAO that is not incorporated or has no legal wrapper is attached to any geographical jurisdiction? And if so, how could they be attached to it?
Is it attached to every constituent member's individual jurisdiction, so some total?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
So your DAO should set a jurisdiction.
Yeah, yeah, that's the question.
Because, I mean, you know, like, this comes back to the question we mentioned earlier. Sometimes people in the space think that if they're not attached to anything, they are not falling under any laws, but in fact, they're falling under any law. It's just the other way around. So,
but there's specifically space law, right? Space law is like its own thing. There's also international space law.
Well, but you know, we're not talking about space law here. Does this fall under space law or not? And then you have another completely different discussion on space law. If you just look at jurisdictions from a national space law, that's what I'm trying to get out of that conversation box. But you know, the whole discussion of like getting a framework going on space law is much.
I think what he's saying is pretty much what you're saying. So when you said that every DAO is actually falling under every jurisdiction, that just means that there's no risk to risk. There's just everything belongs to all people already. When you create a DAO, it's already under all global jurisdictions. So this is how it happens in international waters. This is what happens on Antarctica. This is what happens in space. Also, the analogy actually makes sense.
But in practice, in all these jurisdictions that have something to say, you would say, well, no, this doesn't fall, this has nothing to do with space law, we are talking state jurisdiction. So in a way, I mean, we're trying to just be more practical at that level, you know, just to raise the concerns that exist right now. I think I'm totally in favor of driving the space law discussion forward. Does any of your DAOs fall under any digital or virtual jurisdiction?
What is a digital or virtual?
So some DAO providers claim that they are in themselves a digital jurisdiction.
Can you name and shame them?
I'm not into
that. Well, but what is your? I guess I wonder what is your concept of what the meaning beyond it being a claim? Is there any validity to it, or does it just basically, is it just a fancy way of describing private contractual to abide by certain rules?
I think the moment any of the awards issued in any of those digital jurisdictions is enforceable through the New York Convention, then it would actually become something real. But then that would just mean that it's something like a nation state. We want, as far as I know, we haven't reached that position. But there are people in the space working very hard on trying to make this work, and I'm actually quite excited about that.
Yes, and actually there are some examples that we have of non-state law nonetheless being recognized by states in particular situations. And they,
is there a specific example?
Sharia law.
But Sharia law is state law, customary law, which is a different category as well.
But so, for example,
on a still, per jurisdiction basis,
it is.
In Singapore, we have Sharia courts. In Malaysia, there are Sharia courts. They have parallel court systems for certain classes.
Sharia law is not, there's not just one Sharia law, there are Sharia laws that are very different and it depends on
each state.
But there is, for example, and that plays in here, there are rules of laws, and there's, for example, the AOFI standards that are now used as like their contracts are state. The law of this, the contract is governed by the AOFI standards, and arbitration is supposed to be there without actually having a dedicating a nation state jurisdiction. And in that way, this
still comes down to enforcement. So where are you able to enforce, and which Sharia law court? It always comes down to Sharia court enforcement.
No, but this, for example, there are office standards. So if you have most Islamic law, Islamic finance documents are...
I'm familiar with that. Commerce is on so position for...
So if you look at Islamic finance, a lot of those contracts now say the AOFI standards, because they're like, you know, it's coming out of Bahrain. And then this is actually enforced by the English courts. So
because the English courts have chosen to give that credence between two parties who agreed to contract to it. Where was the court of jurisdiction where you said which court
of
jurisdiction?
Well, but I think she's saying that it's theoretically possible,
it's possible
that something could be done either on an international law basis for.
But that was between two private individuals contracting into, because you can say, I want to try this in the courts of Bahrain according to Qatar.
The point is that arbitration, if you choose arbitration, you can choose your rules of law, your substantive law,
and procedure.
And that just, and your point is that, yeah, but this still needs enforcement, and those are the gatekeepers, right?
Because
but
people can't agree with enforcement.
People enforce private
international
law.
People submit to that enforcement.
Private international law is enforced by nation
states. But the states allow you to actually contract out some of the legal system.
States do between two private individuals subject to illegality and
legal,
other things.
Legal
so private international law is the conflict of laws, which is deciding which laws apply in which situation. So you can do foreign shopping.
It's also shopping. Contract and disputes between private individuals internationally.
That's what you call private international law, the conflict of laws.
So I don't think that's just conflict
given
of
that
laws. It's also conflict in trade disputes.
So it's conflict of laws. The Americans call it conflict of law.
The British
and the
also
rest
call
of the world call it private international law.
Oh.
It's the same thing.
Okay.
So
yes.
The Americans talk about conflict of law, but each of that conflict of law would be depending on the nation state, right? So Germany has different private international law rules than the US.
Okay.
So maybe we move
but
on to the next question.
We should move on to the next question.
Can your DAO rent office space in its name?
Can I just say, I mean, all it seems to me that most of the rest of the questions, in fact, most of the questions in total, just come back to whether the DAO has a legal personality or not,
yes.
Which is just a way of saying, does it have a legal wrapper?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we see that, you know, there seem to be quite a lot of experts up here. It's more about, like, framing the issues and coming back to that one point.
So this was originally supposed to just be an introductory thing where it's like, here are the issues that we start thinking about, right?
We come to that.
So, we like just calm down a little bit and get to the actual, like, instead of arguing with each other before we're finished.
This is what happens. This is why people are like,
where
is
it? We're just setting the stage and then we go to the more basic intro. And the things we think we need to do to work on that law. So, I mean, if you think that these questions you have, we got there, we don't need to continue it, then we stop that now and we go to the
personal. I think we really need to read through them really quickly.
We don't
have to debate. As a thought experiment, you guys don't need to answer, we can go through it.
Yeah, so for example, can you download office space? Comes back to the legal representation. Can your DAO hire employees who are taxable in different jurisdictions? And there actually I found quite interesting with DEORG. It's pretty difficult to do this if your employees are in different jurisdictions.
They decided to do 1099 contractors, so but you still have to like fill a variety of different paperwork
and then Can your DAO open a traditional bank account in your jurisdiction? Same thing comes back to that question. Can your DAO pay taxes? Does your DAO need to pay social security contributions? Well, you employ people, probably yes, but maybe not able to because that's not legal matter. Should your personal legal liability be based on your role as a programmer, designer, architect, legal counsel, content writer, summoner of your town? What do you think? In which roles should there be liability? Probably don't want liability, right? Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, you said you would be here to have liability.
It would be great to have liability, yeah.
Because
that way you can show people that, you know, they can trust you to not screw them.
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, there's this big spectrum between having the heavy hammer of the law imposing all this liability and then having this completely free space that is completely unregulated by...
But if I decide when I have liability, that's a freedom for me,
yeah.
Right? It makes me freer if I can say when the legal system punishes me than if, you know, it gets to decide.
Well, what about...
Well, you have certain...
Or
just control.
But that's
where sort of the choice of legal wrapper comes in, right? The reason why most public companies are corporations is because they scale very easily because they have clear defaults
not waiverable fiduciary duties on the part of boards of directors and management. Therefore, it's much easier for people to trust them. So it's kind of like a package deal. Then you could do LLCs. In many jurisdictions, you can waive away almost all, you know, responsibilities with LLCs. It's kind of like, what's the use case? What are the investments?
And like right now, developers like waive away all their liabilities.
Well, they think they're doing that. They're really not.
Their lawyers write liability waivers.
Yeah, but it's
but they're not enforceable in most jurisdictions.
Yeah, exactly.
They try. That's all I'm saying.
In Europe, they're likely never enforceable. And if you yeah. They're not enforceable.
I only had a question. Shouldn't we define what are these someone liable for? It's not only about the rules, it's also about the actions that you're liable for. So, I mean, it depends. We spoke before that torts are always probably going to be falling under the liability, but I mean, it's not that all actions are going to be something that people are going to apply.
So, you think it should be much more, it depends on the actions, yeah. Whether there should be liability?
On a high level, would you guys be able to kind of like delineate when a DAO should be a corporation versus an LLC versus like a collective in terms of like what I guess the DAO is focused on? If the DAO is focusing primarily on being like an enterprise, then should it like based on scale? If the DAO is just supposed to be like decision making for some internal, let's say like art or music or something that could turn a profit, but it's not like primary motive, is it better to be a collective, like can we, like I know that touches on like corporate governance and like that's a whole other can of worms, but like would we be able to kind of go over the different like benefits, downsides and stuff like that?
So we're gonna kind of get to the, in the presentation that follows this little Q&A, we're gonna kind of talk about this, but one of them is on one hand we have this fundamental problem of, you know, on one hand we have legal roles that require particular structures, right? You have a corporation, you have certain governance procedures that mediate conflicts of interest, you need to have certain things like segregating funds, you know, capitalization. So these are all kind of traditional legal requirements. You have a jurisdictional hook, so your home base is in some jurisdiction. So these are all kind of anathema to the way DAOs work today. You want free from people without having to, you know, pre-vet and identify everyone, perhaps. You want participants from all over the world. You want a decentralized governance structure, not one where you have a clearly identified CEO, COO, etc. So you're seeing many different attempts to bring this decentralized space and somehow shoehorn that into these legal boxes. And because precisely what this gentleman said was that these legal boxes provide certain kinds of legal certainties and protections, which we also need. So how do we resolve this? Do we just say, okay, we need to follow these little boxes and check boxes and conform to these rules? Do we, and one of the thought experiments that we're doing and we're trying to do is figure out, you know, what are the goals behind these mechanisms, these rules? And how do we meet these in a technological context in such a way that we can maybe create a model law that meets these public policy goals, which justifies these protections, while retaining the kinds of features that we want DAOs to continue to have? So bridging that gap is a large part of this work, and we'll get more into it.
And follow on your question that you. It very much depends on what your DAO is supposed to do, how it's structured in the code, as to what legal solutions you opt to. I mean, in the legacy world right now, it's very different of having a grant-giving DAO than a DAO that actually holds a decentralized exchange or has the controlling or operating powers in a decentralized exchange. So there are differences, and it depends on what you want to do. The options depend on that. We just continue going through this and then we get to our proper part. Can your DAO file a lawsuit in court if you don't have a legal wrapper? But no. Can your DAO be sued in court? Actually, if you don't have a legal wrapper? No. Do you think you can be sued in court?
Sorry, but I don't know that the answer is a simple no.
No, it's just a simple, I mean, sorry, I don't want to keep answers to this.
Sure. Yeah, I just, I have no problem skipping over the questions or whatever. Yeah. I don't have case, but I would just caution. I don't think it's true.
Yeah, I think I disagree also.
Yeah.
Because the people who will be sued would be the person in the DAO, not the DAO itself.
Sure, they would be.
And they would like, they would be.
Yeah, the group, if you could sue the full group and they're joined and separately liable, I mean, to me it seems kind of too cute by half to say you can sue the persons but not the DAO. The DAO is a collection of persons.
But what usually happens is like the person who is the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah, the nearest available person.
But imagine
the person who is most easily identifiable.
And the one who's the most money.
But imagine that no one's identifiable. You can still sue them. You can identify them.
There would just be no point. If you can't identify them, there's nothing.
Not necessarily. You can trigger them.
They might have assets somewhere identifiable.
It's crypto assets, but then it's difficult to enforce.
You can.
No, they can have
crypto
assets somewhere.
Eventually,
you can also. No, I don't know. The point is that there is no right or wrong answer.
There is a right or wrong answer.
I don't think.
You won't know until you get sued, and then you hope that it's
there. We should debate all
that. It's not decidable. There is what you're saying. There's no decidable answer.
Does
your jurisprudence allow the creation of a legal entity that wasn't created voluntarily, that isn't associated with any particular people, to be sued? And so when you sue, for example, I can bring a lawsuit, some places you can bring a lawsuit on behalf of a river that was polluted.
Right.
Only three
places. India, you can do that. Okay. India. In India, because the thing is, the idea of legal personality in India is based on collective hallucination. You know how it
Everywhere it's like this.
Well, I know, but it literally states that. Like, enough people hallucinate the existence of something to the person. For example, we have cases of a temple, and the personality of the temple doesn't exist anymore. But people hallucinate together and confirm that there is a temple. And we have like huge political fights around that. So, for example, there are many cases where temples have been turned to mosques, mosques have temples to church, and different groups of people claim personality of, nobody's doubting the personality, but what kind of personality? So, and then most cases, like for example, like the goddesses and gods in India, the actual statue. So, unlike Christianity, every incarnation of God is different. So, it's not like when you give God a personality, it is the personality. So, every instance is a different personality. And then every part of the God is different, every part of the river has a different person responsible for it. So, most rivers and forests in India have a personality, but they can instead miners. So there will be guardians who are taking care of them. So for example, in the case of gods, the tongue is taking care of a certain family, the ears are another family, the eyes are another family, and there's a hierarchy. So the tongues are usually considered the most. People get to take care of the tongues, get to decide over the ears and eyes, because of arbitration problems. So that's why even if you have a personality or something, it's much more complex than anyone's thing, because then you have to decide that because one personality can have sub personalities like India.
Maybe India is not a good idea for.
No, it's a great idea. So, I think it's really good because it demonstrates the flexibility of legal personhood. If there is no rapid free
but
doubt,
it doesn't
I can
we're
create
get,
one
we're gonna get into,
and then I can sue it.
We're going to get into the presentation the difference between legal personality and legal capacity, which are often collapsed, right? So we will
can talk about it because it also depends
exactly
on the theological assumptions. So for example, Hinduism, Buddhism, when you look at the soul or the absence of a soul in Buddhism is different from the Abrahamic traditions. That's why you can have personality and personalities, which you cannot have in the Abrahamic conception of what a person is. Whereas when a person is in India, you can have capacity without agency, for example, in the Indian penal code.
Okay, so last two questions. Does your DAO comply with KYC AML laws? Does your DAO identify its members?
DAO does.
Yeah.
DAO does.
Yes. 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 Yes.
identify meaning legal identity, like legal first name, last name.
Social security number.
Social security number?
Yeah.
You get their social security number?
We have to report it.
Oh, because they're employees.
They're 1099 contractors.
Oh, okay.
Okay, do you think that voting rights holders of your DAO should have mandatory voting rights holders meetings?
The most objective question.
That's amazing. These are just, what was the question?
Basically, like in traditional corporate governance, in order to recognize that you have this legal personality and limited liability to not pierce that veil, you have to have certain kinds of procedures that protect conflicts of interest between the managers and the owners, vice versa, between the shareholders. One of these things is usually a mandatory meeting where people can participate, have the consent, that sort of thing. Do you feel that that is also necessary for its equivalent in the blockchain space, which we're roughly terming as what we
call? That's interesting. I always thought that it's the other way around. It depends on how a DAO actually functions. There should be a legal entity form around them. So if a DAO, for example, functions like the General Assembly, then it's reasonable to form the rules around that that actually describe how the General Assembly functions and how these procedural rules are affecting the DAO. And then here's of the beacon, the bracing of the beacon can happen and the decision actually has some weight. And if it functions in form of having a lot of members, but then there's just a board member that actually creates the decision, then it might actually be that dictatorship. Or there's a whole board that takes the decision and it functions like an LLC. But it's always about how the members are deciding that they're going to be governing themselves. Mm-hmm. But we should apply the rules and we should apply the legal entity and we should form these procedures.
In this case, if we say people who are participating in the governance, should those members, whether it's the board or an entire general assembly, should it be required of DAOs to have these kinds of regular?
Oh yeah, it depends how it affects the members. If it affects me as a member and it's a decision that somebody else took, then I would like them to be responsible for those decisions, if so, it affects me severely. If it does not affect me, but it's just a statement, then it's just a movement. It's not even necessary to have it either.
So as a matter of due process, if you as a member are materially affected, you feel that you...
Yeah, absolutely.
Which then also means you need to distinguish governance, right? People who have voting rights tokens versus, but that might also include, if we widen that circle, people who also have ownership rights.
Yeah.
Right? So then that becomes a difficult to distinguish as well. Yeah. Okay, so we're done with the question of hard things. We're gonna continue this feedback, hopefully, get more when it's not 9 a.m. on the last day of the conference in Typhoon. So this is just an introduction to us. A lot of us are, participants working in different areas of the space. We came together a few years ago to form a research and development community around how to create new legal frameworks, how to create new kinds of culture, that sort of thing. So one of the projects that we've been working on, we've had a variety of working groups over the year, is creating, precisely because of this gap between the way the legacy legal system works and the way this infrastructure enables new kinds of participation which might require a replumbing of all of that. We've come up with this project, which is the DAO Model Law Project. And we can go into the plan right now is to kind of go through what we see as the main issues, and then if we have some time, maybe take a few minutes to break out into each component of the model law and have you guys brainstorm on what we can come up with as a technological guarantee, or in a legal term of art, a functional equivalent to a traditional requirement, such that we can map out a continuum of things that people can do to enjoy a spectrum of legal benefits and protections. That's the main idea. So, as you guys can see from the questionnaire, we've looked at why it's important why do we need to change the law? Because right now, DAOs, putting aside this unincorporated associations, general partnerships, which are then looked at after the fact when things go wrong, right now,
taking away the exceptions.
Right now, DAOs cannot
largely cannot own assets, you know, in its own name, enter into contracts in its own name, sue or be have standing to sue or be sued. And minus and absent all of that, the person who they're going to find, you know, when things go wrong, is the nearest available human. So right now, when DAOs without a legal wrapper, the DAOs do not actually exist in the eyes of the law until after the fact and facts are minus all the exceptions. It's largely the law sees what the DAO is doing through what the participants are doing.
What we see is that a lot of people in the space that don't actually know what their liability is and if the legal risks are when participating in a DAO, when joining as a reputation or voting rights holders in a DAO. No one thinks about it and no one thinks about down the line what could happen out of that.
So, you know, why is it important to solve these problems? Well, right now we have this unlimited liability, never mind wanting limited liability. We have an unknown and unlimited liability today for all participants.
In various jurisdictions.
Right, we'll talk about that specifically. And you know, frankly, DAOs have a difficult time operating in legacy world. I'm sure many of you guys have been involved in projects where it's been very difficult to get a bank account, right? It's an extremely difficult proposition. When you hire employees, with what entity do you hire that employee, right? In the case where you create some sort of legal wrapper, and that particular third party, whether it's a person or a company, contracts with that legal wrapper, there's still the legal reality that exists, and then there's the blockchain reality. So whatever the DAO is supposed to be operated by this code, but you have all of this other non-off-chain rules and procedures and powers, power dynamics that are actually affecting how the DAO operates.
And some jurisdictions have started to implement laws, so for example, Malta, to give some kind of recognition to DAO, so it's part of the framework. What we have, however, noted is that what they're trying to do, I mean, more, and this is now my personal opinion, Malta has very much turned it down into usual corporations by requiring like seven different parties to be intermediaries for that particular DAO. It's very expensive for anyone to register their DAOs in the jurisdiction. This is, in a way, it's part of I would still call it a top-down imposition of a legal of a new framework. And what would be, or an outreach would be important, is creating something that is coming from the ecosystem where we actually can produce a better framework that is more suited to the DAO realities.
Yeah, just sort of maybe a foundational question. I mean, I agree with much of this, but given that there are obviously there are, if the main issue, it seems like the main issue you're floating is people are getting together, they're using smart contracts, they're calling it a DAO, and it's not clear if that has legal personality. It wouldn't be convenient if they did have legal personality. But there are lots of current solutions for giving something legal personality, right, that already exist under current law, limited liability partnerships, limited liability companies, corporation, you name it. So why, it seems like, and I'm sure you have a reason for it, but I'm wondering what the reasons are. It seems like a dramatic step to say, we need a brand new way to create limited liability, to create legal personality. Why are the existing solutions just totally inadequate? What specifically is so bad about them that we need to create a new way of having legal personality?
And in the meantime, until it comes out, everybody's in the legal limbo. So why don't you just use existing structures to cover it off and then instead of waiting 5 or 10 years for this to happen?
Well, I don't know that
they're waiting. Well, we can do both of these things at the same time. This is not and or. I mean, there are, at the moment, current structures, and the best structures right now are in the United States. Mm-hmm. There are various people who are not in the United States or who do not want to be associated to the jurisdictions in the United States. It's it's also a very bad idea, for example, to register if your DAO holds like a decentralized exchange or wallet or whatever to register.